Welcome to Focus on the Community on Memories 107.9 and The General 95.9 and 1580 WAMW. I'm Dave Crooks. Each week we shine a spotlight on topics important to our community. Focus on the Community is sponsored by First Financial Bank with locations in Washington and all across the Wabash Valley. Today we're live on location at Hank's Market in Washington, and my special guest is State Senator Eric Bassler, Republican of Assembly, and we'll find out what we can expect during the upcoming long session. Good morning, Senator Bassler.
Hi, Dave. Good to be here.
Well, thanks for stopping by and giving us a quick legislative update. And I know when I served for my 12 years at the State House, you know, Christmas would wrap up and then you're packing your bags and getting ready to head to the legislature at the first part of January. And to remind people, this is every 2 years we have to dive into the budget, of course, which is always going to be a big deal during the long session. That's pretty much the main focus all year long, as everything seems to be centered around the budget, right?
Yeah, that's correct. It sure is. We just had a, in fact, we had a budget meeting last week that I was able to attend. The universities were kind of reporting on what their anticipated needs are for the next 2 years. So to a certain extent, things are underway right now, but the legislative session doesn't really kick into to high gear until January 3rd.
Now, you're a committee assignment. It's my understanding you're going to be dealing with the budget more this time around, right?
Yeah, that's correct. One of my new committee assignments is called the Appropriations Committee. And as you know, Dave, that's the committee that will have all the hearings with respect to literally all state spending for the next 2 years. So we're going to be digging into that come January, and it will probably take the full 4 months to get through it, I'd imagine.
Well, of course, in the House, the budget writing process starts there in the Ways and Means Committee. I had plenty of friends and colleagues that served on that committee, and my goodness, the amount of hours and time they spent in hearings listening to every agency make their presentation for the two-year budget. You'll wait patiently for the midway part of the session when that budget gets sent to the House, even though I'm sure you'll be busy during that first half of the session, not only dealing with appropriations, but talk about your other committee assignments.
Yeah, there's actually one subcommittee of the Appropriations Committee that I'm also on that has to do with school funding and the school funding formula, so I'll be involved with that this year for the first time. And then two repeat committees I'll still be on. One is education and career development, and then the other one is environmental affairs. So I'm looking forward to those assignments again also.
Well, when we look at all the big issues that will be coming up next session, and the budget, of course, just seems to take most of the focus, but kind of springboarding from just talking about the budget, there's been a lot of hope this year that finally we're going to take a little time to figure out how do we send more road funding dollars back to our cities, counties, and communities that just can't seem to have enough dollars to fix every pothole and pave roads. Tell us about that.
Yeah, those that follow the legislative process closely will recall that we had some additional funding just last year outside the budget process that provided some local road funding, but ultimately that was just a short-term fix. I think we all know that. We knew that at the time. The House put forward some more longer-term solutions, but we just didn't have time to get through those, so we kind of did a Band-Aid, did a short-term fix. This will be one of probably the number two priority this session, number one being the budget, number two being a long-term road funding formula. One of the challenges we have with road funding is you look at today versus, say, 10 years ago, the funds that are directly dedicated to road funding, and when I say road funding, I mean really roads, bridges, beyond just purely roads, has dwindled by about $250 million a year. And that's a significant cut. That has to do a lot with the fact that a big funding source is the gasoline tax. And you know as well as I do that the vehicles continue to get more and more efficient. More people are driving alternative fuel vehicles. More people are driving hybrids. Therefore, they're not buying near as much gas, therefore not near as much road funding. One of the proposals that the House put forward last year was to increase the gasoline tax, essentially just index it to inflation. And then the other one was to increase the tax on cigarettes. And again, I commend them for coming up with some ideas on how we can solve this problem. There's going to be several alternatives. I wouldn't be surprised if those were still on the table this year. I wouldn't be surprised if we'd be looking at some type of maybe tolling for certain roads. So, for example, I know there's a lot of discussion about having a toll bridge across I-69 right down here across the Ohio River. The state just recently opened some new bridges over in Louisville, and those were toll bridges. So I think that's going to be part of the solution. And then I think there might be some additional I guess, creative ways. For example, I've heard some people talk about the fact that every time you would go to the tire store to buy new tires, maybe there would be a $1 per tire tax that would purely go to help road funding. One of the biggest challenges we have about road funding is to try to get the people that are actually using the roads to pay for them. So, for example, you look at long-haul truckers, they may cross the state of Indiana and not pay one penny towards road funding, but yet there's a lot of wear and tear on the roads because of those long-haul truckers. So we're going to look at a lot of different issues. I think literally everything's on the table to figure out how we can put together a long-term solution. And finally, when we say long-term, boy, we'd sure like to be able to have something that would be effective for 10, 15, 20 years so we wouldn't have to keep revisiting this.
And I won't hold you to this, but do you think a gas tax increase is most likely, or do you think it'll be something more creative like some of the things you've touched on?
I wouldn't be surprised. Again, I think we're probably going to end up seeing three or four or five different funding sources, and I would not be surprised if the indexing the gas tax to inflation is given serious consideration.
And you and I know the political side of this, too, and that's what makes it even so difficult. Either side is going to blast the other side when there's a tax increase. I mean, call it what you will, but, you know, everybody's always worried about being called and accused of tax increase here. And that does make this kind of a tight wire kind of situation for you.
No, it really does. And I wish that people could see, because as you were just making that comment, I was smiling with a big smile on my face. But you're right. It does become a challenging issue, especially when you have people, for example, God bless the House people, they run every 2 years, and then the senators run every 4 years. And there's always that possibility that their opponent, if they would have one, would be talking about, you know, so-and-so's a big tax increaser. And then that's going to, you know, that's a challenge. That's something we have to just overcome. I know that sometimes people that are politicians don't say tax increase. They say a fee. So I think sometimes we try to rename it so it doesn't sound quite so bad. But I think that the Hoosier people, I look at the people I've talked to throughout this district, District 39 here in Southwest Indiana, and I think that generally speaking, people are very supportive of having additional road funding, even if it does mean new tolls or indexing the gas tax or some other sources. It seems to have a lot of positive support, at least in this district it does.
Have you had a chance to talk to Lieutenant Governor Holcomb, elect for governor now? He won, of course, and the entire Republican ticket won everything from the statewide races to a supermajority in both the House and the Senate. And, of course, that's good for your side in a lot of ways, but then there's also ways where when you control everything, you guys are completely in charge. So you got to take the blame for the good and the bad, I guess.
You bet. There's no doubt about that. And I think that you and I have had a conversation before that it's nice to be in the majority, but sometimes it's challenging to be in the supermajority,
right.
Because that's when one party or another can start doing things that are maybe a little bit too far out there to be pleasing to the public in general. But I think, you know, we'll work through that, and you're right. It's, you know, good things that happen over the next 2 to 4 years. I guess the Republicans get the credit for it, and bad things that happen, the Republicans will probably get the blame for that.
Now, what about I-69? Have you had an update about when do we anticipate that the road will actually be complete to Indianapolis? Is it still on schedule for late next year, or where are we at?
Yeah, it's still on schedule to be through to Martinsville by late next year. We're still trying to figure out the final route. I mean, it's going to be up 37 from Martinsville on up to 465, but they're doing a lot of the environmental work right now. So I haven't talked to some of the NDOT people lately, but I would not be surprised if the Martinsville up to 465 just outside of Indianapolis, if that leg is not done for probably, my goodness, I wouldn't be surprised for another 5 years or so.
Let's touch on education issues, because obviously the budget focus will be about education, but then there's also a couple of topics that's been fairly timely for the past couple of sessions. A lot of focus on pre-kindergarten. When I served in the State House, it was all about just getting full-day kindergarten going, but now we've pretty much expect that all over the state. Now there's a focus on how can we give pre-kindergarten expansion throughout the state. Tell us about that.
Yeah, 2 years ago, we approved a pilot program that consisted of five counties and a low to moderate income families from those five counties could qualify to have their children go to a level 3 or level 4 quality pre-K program. One thing the legislatures and the governor, for that matter, wanted to be sure of is that it just wasn't being paid for babysitting or daycare type facilities. And so there's a structured process put in place that allows a pre-K school, whether it would be a public school, a private school, a church, a private individual, that if they meet certain standards, they are considered a level 3 or level 4 program. And so those are the ones that the states are willing to pay for. And we had about 2,700 young people, or excuse me, families, take advantage of that over the last 2 years. And we're watching their progress and how the impact that, or what impact the pre-K program has on their quality of their education. I think we're going to look at, I think we have a critical mass this year where we're going to see that expanded. It won't be a statewide program yet. My guess is we'd probably see it expand to maybe another 5, 6, 7 counties. And the counties we've already picked and the counties we would pick have really been kind of spread throughout the state. There's one up in northwest Indiana, one in northeast Indiana, one in the Indianapolis area, one in southwest, and then one in southeast Indiana, because we wanted to have both metropolitan areas, we wanted to have suburban areas, and then also rural areas to see what kind of a positive impact we could have on children's education through a pre-K funding mechanism. So I think we're going to see that expand this year. Again, wouldn't be surprised if it went maybe to 5 additional counties. They might even increase the qualifications as far as if you have a little bit higher income, you can still qualify. Like right now, I think it's maybe 125% of poverty. I think we're looking maybe 180% of poverty of a family would qualify to have their children be in a program.
What's your best prediction on what will happen with the current I-STEP? There will be a replacement plan, do you think, or what's going to happen with that?
Oh, Dave, I've been in the state legislature for 2 years now, and I almost give up predicting about the I-STEP. The good news about the I-STEP is that there was a committee that had been meeting for about 6 months, and it was made up of a lot of educators. They were trying to figure out, where do we go from here? And they've come up with like maybe a handful of key principles that they want the legislature to look at to fix the I-STEP. One of them has to do with shortening the length of the test. Another has to do with instead of having it over a number of days, have it over just one day. One of the other recommendations was to allow teachers to participate in the grading process. So, for example, part of the I-STEP is multiple choice, and on those questions you've either got them wrong or you got them right. But there are open-ended questions, and there's a discussion about if teachers are willing to, or if they want to, it would be a voluntary basis that they could participate in the grading of I-STEP scores. And then we'd like to not recreate the wheel. So, if, for example, if in high school we could use a PSAT exam or a SAT exam, we'd like to do that in order to keep the cost down. And then the final point was we've got to get the results back and get them back quickly. There's no use in having an exam in May and you don't get the results till November. When that exam's in May, those teachers need those results surely sometime in May, June, July, so they could then use those results to help their students starting in August. This habit of the last couple of years of taking it in May and not getting the results until November, December is just ridiculous. So those are some of the things we're going to be working on. So that's the good news. Now, the not so good news is there was some hope that this school year we're in right now would be the last year we would be taking the I-STEP. But with the lead time you need to put in place to develop a new exam and get all the processes put in place and get the test actually tested to be sure it measures what it's supposed to measure, I don't see it going away at least for another year. So I would not be surprised if we had the I-STEP one more school year after this one, and then the following school year is when we would do some type of new testing process.
We're running out of time, but I want to touch on a couple of things. First of all, is there any other pieces of legislation that you've heard about that's coming that might be one of those controversial type proposals that may garner a lot of attention that you can give me some insight on or anything?
Boy, I sure hope not. I jokingly talk about hopefully that we don't get into, you know, too many controversial issues this year. We've had some of those the last couple sessions. But my sense is we're going to stay focused on the budget. We're going to stay focused on roads. We're going to stay focused on trying to fix the I-STEP. And then pre-K is, again, another big item. I've got several bills that I'm working on, one that I've got finalized, but then a few others. And these are mostly related to tax policy issues, education issues, and then local election issues. So.
If people want to get a hold of you now or during the legislative session, they've either got a suggestion or they want to voice their opinion in favor or against a particular piece of legislation, what's the best way for them to reach you?
Yeah, they could reach me by email, and it's just simply ERIC, my first name, Eric, Dot, and then my last name, Bassler, B-A-S-S-L-E-R, at iga.in.gov. That would be an email address where you could reach me.
And then or you might even just go to the state website and navigate you there, because if you land on your website, you're going to find that email quickly.
That would be another way to do that. And then finally, you can feel free to give me a call. Believe it or not, I'm going to get my cell phone out right here on the air. It's 812-617-4269. So feel free to give me a call there if there's anything we can help out with, or if you have any questions whatsoever.
That's what surprises a lot of people about the state legislature. I mean, our state lawmakers are just citizen legislators, and they're accessible in our communities. I see you about every day on Main Street, and it's good to know where your local state legislator is if you've got an issue or a problem. They're just you're pretty approachable, I'll say that.
No, you're absolutely right about that. Little did I envision doing a serious interview in the middle of a grocery store / Ace Hardware store, but here we are at Hank's this morning. So
absolutely. Well, I wish you luck. The long session always a little more challenging, because you guys will probably be up there to at least mid to late April, it looks like, right?
That's correct. And you know, feel free to let me know if you'd like to get together sometime mid session and do another radio show. We sure could.
Absolutely. And feel free to keep us posted, because we know road funding and working on education issues will take probably most of the media attention, but there's always a few other things going on behind the scenes, and some other proposals that you'll probably have on your plate that we'll be hearing more about in the upcoming weeks. So we wish you best of luck, and Merry Christmas to you and your family, and we'll see you again soon.
Thanks so much. Merry Christmas to you and all your listeners. Thanks so much.
Okay. State Senator Eric Bassler of Washington, as he prepares for the upcoming legislative session in January. And again, if you want to reach him, contact him locally at his office, or you can just simply go to in.gov. And when you go to the General Assembly section, you'll easily find his legislative webpage. You can get the latest news from his office, as well as send him a personal email if you've got anything on your mind. Focus on the Community has been brought to you by First Financial Bank, with locations in Washington and across the Wabash Valley. You can grab a rebroadcast of today's program and past shows when you visit our website, wamwamfm.com. I'm Dave Crooks, thanking you for listening to Focus on the Community.